Mr. Lou Dobbs, brother, welcome to the podcast. We need to get you up to my area and sit at the table for like 3 hours.
I need a trip.
Yeah.
I need a trip. Let's do it.
So, for those that don't know who you are.
So, I was a run-of-the-mill ATF agent.
Run-of-the-mill? That's the way you're going to label yourself?
That's what I was, man. There was nothing special. But I was lucky enough to get around some real pipe hitters, some great guys who came before me and learn from them, learn their tricks. And I certainly didn't invent the wheel. I just copied them and tried to make it a little bit better.
Yeah.
And because I was lucky enough to work with some of these guys who were doing this super innovative undercover stuff, I was able to fall into that world and I made a name for myself. And I did it by starting out the way you should start out. If you're a Marine Raider or whatever you are, you got to start out by mastering the small things, the basics.
Yeah.
And that's exactly what I did, because I didn't come from that world. I didn't grow up in that world. So I was doing nickel and dime, eight ball buys in alleyways, in car washes, in parking lots, you know, buying a stolen gun from a convicted felon, from a gangbanger, buying a stolen shotgun from, you know, some cracker out in the country. And just very small cases. And I just kind of built my resume up that way and learned the trade, got my confidence. And what I wanted to do, you know, there were guys that came before me, Jay Dobbins, who was the first guy to ever get a Hell's Angel patch to infiltrate the Hell's Angels. Chris Bayless, who was just doing these incredible cases. And they're traveling all over the country. And that's what I wanted to do. So I didn't try to, you know, just become them overnight.
So you knew Jay and Chris when you were doing...
I did.
Yeah.
Yeah. I was lucky enough to get an invite from Jay in 1999 to do a home invasion crew out in Tucson, Arizona. And that was kind of my introduction to the national scale. I almost blew it when I was out there. So I was kind of the new guy, and you know, they were, you know, so they're kind of busting my balls. And with these home invasion crews, after, you know, we bought a bunch of guns from these guys, we bought a bunch of dope, we bought explosives from these guys. They were selling.
What time frame was this?
This was 1999.
Wow.
They were selling not only pipe bombs, but they were selling RPGs.
Shut the fuck.
So we had bought an RPG from them, and
in
Tucson, Arizona, man. Yep. And
what were they using? What are we going to do with an RPG?
You know, even back then, they were all tied into cartels, and they had access to some of these crazy weapons and explosives, man. Even back then.
Damn.
So when you do these home invasion crews, you know, the home invasion is one that we make up, so it's not real, but they think we're really going to hit a stash house.
Okay.
So you do a final meet, always to give them an out. So I would say, you know, Nick, you sure you want to do this? Right? I'm giving you that last chance, right, to give you an out, you know, and that's for legal reasons, right?
Okay. They're committed.
So, exactly.
Yeah.
So the SWAT team is always, you know, following us around, you know, during these deals. Usually they're like on top of buildings or up in trees and they're sweating and they're miserable. So to kind of throw them a bone, Jay set this last meeting in a strip joint in Tucson. So they could dress down in plain clothes and just be patrons, right?
Yeah.
So what Jay did was...
For security reasons, right?
So back then, you know, we had the big Nagra, the recording equipment and stuff. This was before we had all the fancy little key fobs and shit.
Yeah.
So Jay was like, all right, you're gonna wear all the monitoring and recording equipment. And the only place, it's Tucson, right? And it was hot as shit, was in my, you know, I'm wearing jeans and a t-shirt. So I had to put it all in my groin, you know, hide it all in my underwear and shit. So I had all this stuff in there that's recording and monitoring so the teams can hear us. And then when we get in there and we meet with the bad guys and all, and after they leave, Jay sends a stripper over. He pays for a lap dance for me to make me more uncomfortable because I got all this shit.
Oh,
and now
my God,
man. There's a girl dancing, right? And I'm... So I said, all right, you know what? I'll play with this. So I asked her, I said, how much did he pay you for this? She said, $20. I said, here's 40. When you're done with this song, I said, I want you to give him a lap dance. I said, but he's kind of kinky. He likes it rough. So give him a little slap in the face, right? So she goes over there and she starts dancing for him. And she turns around, and I didn't see she had rings on. She turns around with like a Mike Tyson right hook, right to his upper cheek.
What?
And blows his face up. Right here, he still has a scar today. Both eyes blackened the next day, and so he was getting sutured in the by the SWAT medic in the bathroom. Sutured him, that's how bad it was. And I was like, I'm done, man. Like, I'm never going to get invited to anything again. Like, he, to say he was pissed off would be an understatement. And again, I was a new guy, man. So I was like,
how new were you?
I jumped over to ATF in the end of '97, and this was
so a couple years.
Maybe two years on. Yeah. So I was like, well, that's my first and last invite to the big leagues. And
I guess I'm going back to doing paperwork.
Back to the alleyways, yeah. Right, and the parking lot. So. But anyway, Chrisser, who's here right now, Chris Bayless, he smoothed everything out and talked Jay down, and everything was cool, and we became friends after that. And that was my first time, you know, working with those guys who were kind of, I don't want to use the word heroes, but they were guys I looked up to.
Yeah.
And that kind of broke me in that world, and I was addicted to it. And I was able to start traveling the country after that. Once I had built my resume up doing those small time things. And next thing I know, I'm all over the country embedding myself with these criminal organizations, just doing what I absolutely love to do, man. It was the only thing in my life that I ever felt like I was really good at, you know?
Yeah, we've talked on the side, like it kind of became part of your identity, right?
It
did. Undercover work. How long did you do it?
18 years.
18 years?
Undercover.
Undercover?
Yep.
How fucked up was your brain when you got done?
Real bad. Real bad. And, you know, I would never advise anyone. The smart guys and girls do it for 5 or 6 years.
And then they're done.
Yeah, they go do something and build their resume and get a good job when they retire.
Have a life.
They have a life.
Yeah, have a life.
And I can tell you this, there's zero market for a retired undercover agent in the private sector. I mean, I couldn't get a job when I retired because it's not a transferable skill to the private sector at all.
I mean, corporate espionage, maybe.
Yeah, maybe. But and I found ATF wasn't a big help on the resume, not a very popular agency.
No, not when you retired, huh?
Nope.
Yeah.
So I didn't care because I was able to do what I love to do.
Yeah.
Guys like us, I think we run everything into the ground because that's our nature, and that's what I did, yeah. And no one to blame but myself.
Same.
And just like you.
I mean, initially, like, and we've talked about this, but like initially, I was pointing fingers at the organization,
right?
It's normal, right? Yeah. But the reality is, it's on you, man.
It's us.
Yeah, it's you.
Nobody put a gun to your head. And
no,
made it.
I volunteered, and then I volunteered again, right. And then I volunteered again. Yeah.
Yeah, so right. you can blame the brass and you can blame management all you want.
You're doing it because you want to do it. Let's be real. Yeah.
But, you know, I wouldn't change a thing. I'm sure you're the same. You know, it fucked me up. It didn't work out well for the family and all that. But I would not change anything because at least I got to do what I feel I was made to do.
Yeah.
And get to the highest level. Yeah, and then I fucked it all up. But I got to the highest level at some point, so.
And then you had to figure it all out after the fact.
I had to crawl over that finish line, brother.
Yeah.
At the end, yep. But I did crawl over it.
So what's your, you know, obviously, you know, back in your day in the ATF, you guys were dealing with scary-ass criminals.
Yeah.
Like evil people.
Yep.
Where are you at today with what the shenanigans they're doing?
I'm not proud of where my agency is going.
It's like their point. From my point of view, it's like they pivoted from really dudes with RPGs to like tax-paying citizens
to legitimate gun dealers.
Yeah.
Well, as you know better than anyone, it's leadership. Okay. Mm-hmm. Right. Mm-hmm. So everything goes. It's all about leadership, and it all trickles down. So if you look at the leadership, the current ATF director. He was Obama's roommate at Harvard, So that should give you some idea of what his thoughts on
guns
are.
This is the guy that was trying to describe guns and,
yes.
And totally fucked it up.
Didn't know anything.
Yeah.
So if when you have an anti-gun director
of, at the ATF,
that's exactly what you're going to get. And what I see, these rulings coming out, which are always very confusing, first of all. And what they're doing is, instead of going after the criminals now, you know, they're targeting legitimate federal firearms licensees and saying they're the bad guys. They're trying to do everything right.
Yeah.
With a legal commodity, in the legal marketplace.
Which is backed by our Constitution.
Yeah. They're trying to do everything right. And that's who the ATF is targeting now. Not the end user, not the trigger puller.
I mean, you were probably in such a different world, but did you kind of see this over those years?
Oh,
did you
kind
of see the snowball effect of this happening?
Really saw it, and you know, I don't want to get political, but I saw it when Bush got out and when Obama came in. And
that's when we felt it too in the military. Same
the
exact
memos
time.
We started to get where we had a prior leader who had said that, you know, we need to have a warrior mindset. And all of a sudden a memo came out saying, you know, we're not warriors, we're guardians. And we were all like, what? Guardians? Like, you know, we're gangs, guns, and drugs. You know, we're not guardians.
Bad people.
Bad people, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm not trying to guard them. And even memos coming out wanting us to refer to defendants as clients. So
that's interesting, because that kind of dialogue is the exact kind of dialogue and memos we were getting in special operations. It was like it went from them being the enemy to them being misunderstood.
Yes.
And all of a sudden we had handcuffs on us, and we had to play a lighter role, and that was under the Obama administration.
Exactly.
That was right when we started to happen and shit started to kind of.
And that's. I mean, you know, to hear that from you guys, you're in a higher level than we
are.
Yeah,
I'm in Afghanistan.
Right,
you know
right.
What I'm saying?
So, yeah. You know, it's definitely a trickle down, you know, from leadership, and it affects, you know, the guys on the street, the guys on the battlefield. When you have really bad judgment, you know, up at the top, you're handcuffed. Like, you're handcuffed, man.
Yeah.
And it changes the job. And then and what happens then, and I've seen this, is you don't get the same recruits. You know, and I've seen that with newer academy classes.
I wonder if you go back, would you and I get selected for the same job?
Probably not.
Now?
Probably not. Not if we answered questions honestly.
If we were honest.
Right. Yeah. Probably not.
Like, I don't think so.
Yep.
Yeah.
And, you know, I feel super, like, this subject, I feel strongly about that our country needs
strong leadership.
Guys like us.
Yeah.
Right? We're necessary for this country to survive in the world, because the world is dangerous and ugly.
It's not all unicorns and rainbows they want it to be.
Nope.
Yeah. Sometimes you got to do some, sometimes you need some bad men to do some bad things.
Absolutely. Because there's those out there that don't understand a good talking to. There's only one thing they understand.
Force.
That's right. And that's all they respect.
Yeah. And I think the gross populace, they have this misconception that you can like reason or talk or that the evil that we know exists in the world is not there.
Right. Right. And that's just naivety, man. That's just, you know, if you don't get that, you are going to be a victim.
Right.
If that's your mindset, your day's coming.
Your day's coming at some point.
For sure.
So you do this 18 years undercover.
Yeah.
Totally blow up your life.
Yeah.
Like as we all do.
Right.
And then you kind of have to put it all back together. And where did CORE, it was obviously we're at the Military Appreciation Weekend. Thanks for being here, by the way.
Absolutely.
Again. But how did that transition, that recovery into you being who you are today? How did CORE fit into that? How did the hormones fit into that?
I was at a low point mentally and physically. And physically, I was a train wreck with no motivation.
Mm-hmm.
Always wanting to take a nap.
Yeah.
I always wanted to take a nap. It was unbelievable.
Like you wake up exhausted.
Exhausted.
Yeah.
And I couldn't understand why. Yeah. I couldn't understand why. And, you know, mentally.
Mm. How old were you when you retired?
I was 48 when I retired.
48?
Yeah.
Damn.
I had 26 years. I came on at 22. I did 26 years. And, you know, I retired. I was kind of asked to leave, but I retired.
Sure. All the good ones are.
Right.
Yeah.
It's kind of escorted me.
It's time for you to go.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, you don't have to go home, but you can't stay here. Kind of. So I had blown up my my personal life and my professional life. So, you know, I was at a low mentally and a low physically. So, and I couldn't get a job. I couldn't find a job. That I really had no transferable skills to the private sector. So I really didn't know where to turn. And when I found CORE, I had no idea. I'd never really gotten blood work done.
Yeah.
I hadn't. You know, I'm sure you guys are saying, we got a government physical once every year. And yeah. I mean, the bare minimum.
But they're not looking at hormones.
Nothing.
Or anything like that. Yeah.
I thought I was generally healthy.
Yeah.
And, you know, when I saw this 5-page, you know, blood test come back, and I saw all these areas where I was like in danger of
yeah.
It was amazing.
You know, I mean, you ran hot for a long time.
Yeah, I was in the red for a long time.
Yeah.
And, you know, my wife looked over that and she was like, wow, you're a train wreck. And
No wonder you're an asshole.
Right,
yeah, right. Yeah.
Well, that explains it, right?
Right, yeah.
And you know, like so many other guys, I thought, you know, I mean, I looked decent. I was like, yeah, hey, I must be in decent shape. You know, I was in a bad way. And once I started getting everything regulated, you know, once I signed up with CORE and I started getting regulated, the most amazing thing to me was I didn't want to take a nap anymore.
Yeah.
Like all of a sudden.
You're ready to like do shit.
Yeah, I wasn't dragging ass.
Yeah.
And miraculously, at that point, I started making money again, right?
I try to tell people, man,
yep.
It's a weird thing.
Like
it's like, I know it sounds stupid to say, get on testosterone, you'll make more money.
Dude, it's crazy.
It happens. I think it's just because you have more drive.
Yes.
So it's not just the nap thing, but it's you wake up and you're like, I want to attack life.
Yes.
And because of that, you end up inadvertently having more opportunities and making more shit happen.
Yeah. Because you're out there and you're doing it. And it
instead of just sitting on the couch feeling like shit. Yeah.
Because, and you know, I'm sure you're just, you know, the government pension isn't all it's cracked up to be. So, you know, right? So
unless you want to live in a van down by the river,
right,
that's
right.
You're not getting much else.
So, you know, once I got into CORE and once I got right and I got balanced, my motivation went through the roof.
Yeah.
And that's when I really jumped into this whole entertainment industry thing.
So speaking of that, you got a thing, right?
So it was actually Bootsy when I was way down who said, you got to write a book.
Write
a book. And the only reason he said that was for my mental health, because he saw I was in a bad way.
It's a cathartic process.
Absolutely. As you know, because you got a great book. So I wrote the book, but I didn't do anything with it. I never marketed it. I didn't do anything with it. You know, I wrote it as a mental practice almost. And
encapsulating all of your stuff.
Yeah. But I didn't make money off it because I never pushed it. I never tried. As soon as I got right, as soon as I got to CORE and I found my motivation, you know, I went out there, I got a literary agent. He sold, and this is amazing. You know, we talk about I had not made money for like 3 years after I retired.
No shit.
I hadn't. And then I sold the rights to my book. As soon as I got motivated, I got a literary agent, I started hustling. A big Hollywood company bought it. Now they're making a Netflix series out of it. And then Discovery came calling, the Discovery Channel, and I got a show on Discovery that's already aired. We're filming the whole first season starting April 1st.
Mm-hmm.
And again, my motive, you know, like I'm on the phone every day, I'm recruiting police departments, you know, to go film these different shows at, because I'm motivated.
Yeah.
I have energy now.
Give me the synopsis of the Discovery one.
I go around the country featuring any undercover sting operations that local police departments are into. And it could be a prostitution ring, it could be guns, drugs, stolen merchandise, human trafficking, and we just want to highlight the good work, you know, that these cops are doing out on the street that's actually impacting the community.
It,
you know,
drastically, but it impacts their own individual life as well.
For sure.
Yeah.
For
so
sure.
It's a sacrifice that they're volunteering to do, you know.
And you know, people don't know about these things, obviously, because of the nature of undercover work, but we just want to highlight it and show law enforcement in a good light, because there's been about 4 years now where all you see is bad things about law enforcement, right?
Yeah.
I mean, everyone's kicking law enforcement in the ass. Yeah. So our goal, and I have a very pro-law enforcement team at Discovery Channel. And
awesome.
The goal is just to show a good light, shine a good light on the work that they're doing that is actually saving lives. And like I said, it's making a difference in these communities. Like when they do one of these stings, and whether they're taking out people who are preying on kids, you know, or whether they're taking out people who are putting that fentanyl poison on the street, it's a difference right there in that community when you take that, you know, those guys off the street.
Yeah.
So it's cool work.
It puts a dent. It puts a dent.
It does. It does. It keeps them looking over their shoulder, right? Yeah. I mean, you're never going to stop it totally, but we got to keep them looking over their shoulder, because this administration has come in and the bad guys aren't looking over their shoulder anymore.
No.
Because they're getting, if they do get locked up, they're out the same day. And
he got, this is another podcast, I'll have to show it, but he was a cop in Detroit, got shot in the stomach, shot the guy 7 times.
Wow.
He lived. Let's just leave it at that. I don't know how he lived, but
cockroaches.
He lived.
Yep.
Yeah.
Cockroaches.
Cockroaches. Yeah. And they found him not guilty. Body cam footage, everything, saw the muzzle flash, everything, found him not guilty. And then oust him.
Chris told me about you. Yeah.
How fucked up is that, dude?
I don't even know how to. I can't even.
Anyway, so it's probably a decent PR piece for the public to witness that kind of thing, to see the really evil work that they're having to deal with, to go, oh yeah, there's a purpose.
Yep.
For this.
These cops care, like. They grew up in, a lot of them grew up in that community. They live in that community, and they actually do give a shit, and they're making a difference right there. So we just want to show that, man.
Nice.
You know, it's...
So the first episode's already out, right?
It's already been out.
What's it called?
Operation Undercover. It's on Investigation Discovery. It's also on Discovery Plus and Max.
Okay.
Used to be HBO Max.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So you can stream it anytime. Just type in Operation Undercover on Max.
And then
Max,
you're going to go back and you're doing more...
We're doing seven more episodes. Mm-hmm. And that'll be a whole first season, and then hopefully I have a second season after that.
And where's your book at?
The book is on Amazon. It's called Storefront Sting, An ATF Agent's Life Undercover. And, you know, it's just out there on Amazon. And the Netflix show is in production. We have a writer, and it started, man.
Congrats, so, dude. Congrats.
And once again, all because I found it inside of me to start hustling, and I give that credit to Core Medical, because it changed my life.
And the biggest thing, we talked about this in the pool a while back, but it was just the biggest thing, I think, is just taking ownership of where you're at, just owning it and being like, I'm in charge of getting healthy. I'm in charge of my own success.
Yep.
And then when you do that, it's like, there it is.
Yeah. I mean, I was a slug. Like,
I
really was.
Oh, I know. I was. No direction.
Nope.
You know, no drive. And then everything changed once.
Yep.
Yeah.
And you know, I realized that, like, I had some chemical imbalances, man. You know, that I needed to get adjusted. And man, what a difference. It wasn't overnight, but it was within a couple of weeks. Like, things started to change. And I know it sounds cool. Amazingly, I started making money right after that.
Yeah, that's what I try to tell people, man. Well, guys, listen, he's gonna come to Wilmington or to our neck of the woods.
Yes,
we're gonna
I
sit
am.
Down for 3 hours and just do storytelling. Which is anytime you or Chris or Mel all talk, I'm just like, whoa, you guys have a wild life, man.
We had a good run. You know, we were allowed to do it when we could still be cowboys.
Right.
You know, they could never do what we were doing then, you know.
And
this wasn't that long ago.
End of an era, though.
Yeah, it was the end of an era. We had a good run. We had a good crew. And we killed it, man.
Yeah.
You know.
So in the comments... In either the podcast or the video, drop all your questions. We'll refer to that. And that way we can tell some more stories when you come up. All right. Other than that, hey, tag him, tag myself, screenshot this, share this with a friend. Peace.
Thank you.
Say hi to our friend.
I love this guy.